Writing teaching philosophy statements. Why do you teach the way you do? It seems an obvious question, but many of us wrestle with how to answer it in a teaching philosophy statement. In my own case, I have a teaching degree and I took classes on teaching philosophies and research on effective practices. But despite this, in the past, writing these statements has given me trouble. One way to get started on an answer is to dip into the research literature on effective teaching. And one way to do that quickly is to speak with a teaching and learning specialist.
Today I'm joined by Cosette Lemelin, who's an educational developer here at the Center for Teaching and Learning at the University of Alberta. Cosette and I have done in the past, and will be doing again, workshops on writing a teaching philosophy statement. So welcome, Cosette.
Thanks, Roger. I'm pleased to join you today.
Let's start with this question. Why are teaching philosophy statements so hard to write?
I think, first of all, many instructors don't have experience with this type of writing. Here in academia, they've written a thesis, a dissertation to get the job. And when they have the job, they write lecture notes and conference talks and grant proposals and research articles and book chapters. But depending on their field, they may have never been asked to reflect on their beliefs and values about teaching, or express those beliefs and values about teaching in the first person using I. So sometimes when I meet with an instructor and explain what teaching philosophy statements are about, they look at me and they say, "You want me to do what?"
Yeah.
I think another reason the teaching statements can seem hard to write at the beginning is because the instructors that I've worked with, many of them haven't had formal education or instruction in teaching. Most of them learn to teach, or they're learning how to teach.
Yeah, I do have a Bachelor of Education. Right. I did teach in high schools for 4 years, but I still find these things really hard to write, too.
Right, and so without formal instruction in how to teach or how to write a teaching philosophy, they're learning how to teach and talk about teaching largely by trial and error. And so they figure out by trial and error what goes right, what goes wrong, what works, what doesn't work with their students. They may pick up formal or informal feedback from students or their colleagues. So I meet with an instructor and it's time to write their teaching philosophy statement. And even if that instructor feels confident or capable in their teaching, they may not be able to communicate why their teaching works. They'll say, "Well, it works because I've tried it every other way, and this is what works, so I'm sticking with it." Alternatively, I'll meet with an instructor who is very early on in their career as an instructor. They need to write a teaching philosophy statement, maybe to apply for a job, or it's a task that they've been asked to do earlier on in their career by their faculty or department. And they'll base that first draft on, "My teaching philosophy is based on how I think I best learned when I was a student." And many of these instructors were high-achieving academics, and not all of their students are.
Thanks. I think that gets at some of the reasons that it gets difficult for people to get started on these things. Today I'm inspired to go with the metaphor of gardening, probably because I'm plowing and tilling soil for a new garden. But I think part of what slows instructors down when writing teaching philosophy statements is the idea that they need to be perfect, finished documents rather than documents that get planted, grow, and are pruned as they mature. What's your favorite way of thinking about these documents?
Well, a couple of thoughts there. I think it's a messy process. I think teaching philosophy statements can't be written overnight or in one sitting. I mean, that sounds obvious. The instructors have done lots of different types of writing and they're familiar with the concept of writing several drafts. But in this case, it really forces you to think deeply about your teaching in a process that sometimes will force you to get stuck about, well, why am I doing what I'm doing? And often the answers don't come to you when you're sitting in front of the computer and the cursor is winking at you. The answers come to you when you're out walking the dog or after a meaningful conversation with a student. A metaphor that I find really helpful is the idea of cooking a meal with several courses. So if I think about what I do with instructors, is I think about getting a kitchen really messy before the meal is complete or the teaching philosophy is complete. So as an ed developer, if you come to see me about your teaching philosophy, I'm going to ask you to start by giving some examples of your favorite classes, your favorite student experiences, teaching moments that have gone well, gone not so well, just like you'd pull ingredients out of the fridge, the pantry, or off the spice rack. And we're going to lay them out in a bit of a brainstorm until we toss these ideas around and it starts to look like something that's authentically you and your approach to teaching. We'll approach it like there's 3 to 5 themes within all of these ideas, like there's often several pots boiling on the stove when we're preparing a multi-course meal. And we'll figure out what those themes are that make you the instructor. And then once we have all of these themes or dishes under control, we'll start editing. And we'll add citations from the literature that support why are some of the reasons you're doing what you're doing as an instructor. Just like we would wipe off the backsplash and clean up the debris and all those pots that are now all over your countertop. And when we finish this process, it'll be something that you feel really, really good to serve and will serve you in the long haul as an instructor.
Some of that sounded like a therapy session, but I'm just going to move on from that. How do students learn? And how do we talk about that succinctly? I think that's a problem.
It is challenging, isn't it? Because if you go on to any bookstore website, you're going to see several books by that title. And the challenge with such books, as valuable as many of them are, is that students learn a lot of different ways. And it largely depends on who they are, what is the discipline. There's a lot of moving parts there that answer that question.
For sure.
When I work with instructors, I would reframe the question to be, well, how do you think students learn within the context of your discipline or your field of study?
Or even in a course you're teaching right now.
Right. Right. At this particular point in their development as adults and their journey into who they're going to be in the world, what do they need as learners? So I think of an example of a colleague that I worked with in Earth and Atmospheric Sciences, and we worked together to answer this question by thinking about, well, how did his students learn in those foundational courses where they were just starting to learn about the basics of rock formations and going to their first labs? And then what kind of teaching and learning happened when they got out into the field placements and they were learning the knowledge and skills of the geologist and the practical applications and the consolidation of all of these ideas that they may have learned in the classroom?
I think that's a really key point. You change that context and then the methods and the kind of learning changes.
And I think ultimately, whether we realize it or not, we adapt our instruction to the needs of the different learners and the different situations in which we teach, which I'm not sure the question, how do students learn, always captures.
What's an example of one of your main ideas about teaching, something that you would include in your own teaching philosophy statement? What's one of the precepts that you've worked from, generally speaking?
I start with what motivates me as an instructor and how I see my learners really shapes how I approach the task of teaching, right? If I think back to early traditional ways of thinking about students as these little vessels that we needed to pour information into, that would shape my whole approach to teaching. If I think about
But you don't think that way.
I don't. But that's one end of the spectrum, right?
Yep.
On the other end of the spectrum, we have instructors who feel that their role in their courses is to help students develop holistically as individuals on their way to becoming, it may be a professional career or it may be an academic career. And so they see their role more as a mentor, a guide, a support for the student, a facilitator. And when I work with instructors, I see instructors motivated by those kinds of motivations across the spectrum.
You and I have worked with instructors on teaching philosophy statements for some time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we find that the instructors in their documents are too, quote unquote, high level or abstract in their statements. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think the teaching philosophy statement is unique in that There's not a lot of situations in academia where instructors are asked about themselves.
And the word philosophy, I think, goes, whoa, this better be big ideas now.
Yes. I just don't think that instructors are frequently asked to reflect on themselves, either as professionals or about how they bring themselves as people to their practice as teachers. I think that in their role as instructors and as academics, they think about their research, their students, their projects, their publications, their committees. And then along comes the idea of a teaching philosophy statement, and it's asking them to think about, well, what do you think and believe about what you're doing in your teaching?
So that'll slow anybody down. Really? I don't know.
I think it is a great opportunity to stop and remember about why we do this. The teaching, I mean. I know I've worked with a number of instructors who have said to me, God, I wish I, and often when they're applying for an award and it's towards the end of their career, and I'll say, you know, because I really wish I'd done this earlier on in my career. I've kind of gone through a lot of my teaching quite unconsciously, not realizing what I do.
Yeah.
And some of that may be very successful, but it's common that they first approach it as an academic piece or a philosophical piece the first time around. But then when we start getting into, well, why do you think that way? Or how did you come to have that particular belief about how teaching and learning happens?
Well, as an instructor, I know my first problem is to get through my classes and get my courses taught. This is all very applied and get through it. And so you're not abstracting from it or philosophizing about it. You're just living through it because of the day-to-day life. And so at some point, though, you're asked to step back. And that's when, if you haven't really been thinking about it, it takes a little bit of getting used to figure out, how do I get into that problem?
Absolutely. And this is where a consult with an ed developer can be really helpful.
True, absolutely, because it gives you someone to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
These teaching philosophy statements, sometimes they're part of award applications, as you mentioned, and they're definitely part of tenure and promotion applications, and that makes them high-stakes documents.
Right.
So I think because of the high stakes, that also slows people down and puts pressure on them. Oh, man, there's a lot riding on what I say here.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets that, again, all of this just makes you slow down and not get started and, to some extent, even avoid writing them. Let's take a look at some of these prompts for getting instructors started on writing this document. So what prompts would help people?
I think some prompts that would be useful would be, you know, get out whatever writing tool is best for you and jot down some ideas about, well, what were the best experiences you've had as an instructor? What are some of the most meaningful interactions you've had with students? How do you approach teaching? How do you know when a class is going well? And conversely, how do you know when it's not going so well? I mean, we learn as much from what doesn't go well as we do from seeing something go well.
Yes, but it's more painful.
Yes, it is. We all approach teaching in our discipline a little bit differently. There's a lot of different ways to be a good university instructor.
I would say, though, that in some disciplines, there are more or less standard ways of doing things. Like in math, they do the chalk talk.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see that in other places necessarily. So some different departments have ways in which they traditionally do things. And then we try to add to that based on the research literature about how students learn.
What other prompts have you used when working with instructors and teaching philosophies, Roger?
I don't usually do that. I'm mostly trying to do this myself as an instructor. I don't try to, you know, talk to, I can help people do the writing. So I would give people prompts like this. So, quote unquote, I think students learn most when, and then complete that sentence.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell a class is going well when, complete that sentence. And another one, I've watched myself learn new things, such as, and in my case, how to hook up an attachment to a tractor. For me, that's YouTube. That's where I'm going to learn that. And so I have to see the visually how that thing clicks in there and so on, right? And then I watch it a couple of times and I try it and it doesn't work and then I go back and again. So there's this iterative process.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start to see the value of that kind of video tutorial, in which case I then go and create video tutorials when I'm trying to teach students because there's a huge value in being able to watch it a couple of times. And sometimes you can... Another prompt would be, when I observed a nephew, child, teenager attempt to learn something, I saw that they And this comes to me because whenever I'm tempted to ask my computer science major son a question, he just goes and Googles it. It's like, not that, I mean, I could do that, but I don't reflectively go and do that, but he does. And then so the embarrassment of having gone through that process now has caused me to remember I should just Google this myself first and then ask him. So if you sort of watch what students are doing, that gives you a lot of clues as to what their strategies are. And then you can kind of think about how your strategies might intersect with theirs and how that might work. So if you know what they're going to do, then you can maybe tap into what they're going to do. Because the other thing they do is they often will talk to their friends.
Yes.
Online, like not necessarily face-to-face, but online. So it's like, okay, well, what if I just put them in a group and have them talk to each other? And then that will sort of jump in and use that. That's their strategy anyway. And so why don't I just use that strategy? And so those are some of the things that have come up around that.
Okay. Well, and I think that my approach as well depends on the instructor that I'm working with. Some of our instructors come to us with a few ideas already jotted down, or they've had a draft that has had a number of suggested revisions from a colleague, and then, of course, we start from a very different place. Other instructors are inspired to explore a teaching philosophy, and they don't know where to start, and a few have asked me, well, what could I read to get me thinking about teaching and learning?
Oh, yeah.
So something like Palmer's The Courage to Teach, or one of Stephen Brookfield's books, for instance. We've had some great speakers through the Festival of Teaching and Learning, The Naked Teacher, and How Good College Teachers Teach. Ken Baines, right. Those are good books, I think, if someone wants to, for lack of a better way of saying it, get in the mood to write a teaching philosophy.
They become idea generation techniques. So
right.
skim through those books, see what they're saying, drop in, look for some sections, and then you go, yes, that's what I'm doing.
Well, and I think that this is a process that academics as well are particularly familiar with. I mean, when you want to learn about a new topic, what do? You go and you review the literature on what's been written on that topic.
Yeah. I think, though, many of us don't know where that literature is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the suggestions you've given are really good because there's Mary Ellen Wymer was another mm-hmm. one, right?
So oh, yeah, she's important.
You can just go to Amazon, start typing those titles in, and you'll see the people also bought category.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll sort of start you getting going on some ideas about this. Because another problem with teaching philosophy statements is I don't know the teaching educational literature on this.
Yes.
So I'm not kind of sure how to get into that. But this is one of the ways that you might get into it.
If you just have a snippet of time over a cup of coffee, the Faculty Focus website as well is something you can get a quick one-pager, the teaching professor. They have like a one-pager article that you can, some will connect with you, some won't, as a way to get you thinking about teaching. I usually work with instructors to generate the ideas and then go back and look at, well, these are the ideas in the educational literature that are talking about what you've just explained to me. You have no idea what the zone of proximal development was ever about.
Vygotsky.
Exactly. But that's essentially what you've explained to me, right? I want to reach a student within a zone that's not too easy, that's not too hard. So
that's a great reason to talk to an ed developer.
That's a very good reason to talk to an ed developer.
Because they can help you with that. So,
but if you are looking for something interesting to read to inspire you to even begin, you might start with one of the books we've recommended.
So I think what we'll do is we'll post some links to some of those suggested texts mm-hmm. on the website that accompanies the podcast so people can follow up and quickly find some of those resources.
You'll find those resources at www.ualberta.ca/Center for Teaching and Learning.